97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Down here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, come grab yourself some jazz gear. Talk to Rich and the crew down here. They'll help you out with whatever vehicle needs you may have. Hey, look, if you've got a used vehicle that you're hanging on to, you don't like it, you think you're way upside down, now's the time. They need used inventory badly down here. So you swing on by your used vehicle, and you've got a chance to flip that into something really nice. You've got more, dare I even say, equity in that ride than you've ever had before. There's a little word that nobody uses very often in the car world. It's appreciation. Well, the demand is so high that you're seeing opportunities to actually make a little bit of money on your vehicle. There's a guy we talked to who bought a car back in January, and his car is now worth $4,000 more than what he paid for it. That never happens. It just doesn't happen in this business. And so you can take advantage of it right now. Come down, say hi. 4500 South State Street right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. All right, before we get to Ben Anderson and chat a little NBA with him, it is a Wednesday, which means, Lloyd, it's a win ticket Wednesday.
This is your chance to win tickets.
Win.
It's a win ticket Wednesday. Caller number 12 right now at 855-340-ZONE. Woo! And you'll win tickets right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
Hey, you got yourself a six-game homestand kicking off with the Salt Lake Bees. The Rivercats are in town Thursday, August 12th through August 17th from Sacramento. So come out and support the Bees. It's better at the ballpark. Tickets on sale at slbees.com. And right now we are giving away a four-pack to see the Bees up against the Rivercats on Saturday, August 14th. So your chance to win tickets is right now. 855-340-ZONE. That's 855-340-ZONE. And go out to the ballpark, enjoy yourself a nice cold beverage, grab yourself a dog, and enjoy seeing some baseball. August 14th, can't beat it. Nice little way to get you back into the groove of going to some live sporting events. And so you can get ready for the football season in the fall. Stadiums right now still listed as full capacity. Get this Delta variant under control. Get the vaccination rates back up. I'm sure that'll stay. Honestly, I think it will continue to stay. But, you know, there's some rumblings out there that people are concerned about this thing. So, tell you what, right now, if you can, and if you decide to, get the vaccination, and let's move on. Let's get going. All right, Ben Anderson expected to join us coming up here in just a moment. We'll chat some NBA hoops with him. Jazz with draft day coming up tomorrow, and get Ben's thoughts as to whether or not the Jazz will stay at 30 and or maybe move that pick back and maybe pick in the second round. So Jazz have some options available to them. And again, we've been talking about this a lot. If the Jazz pick at 30, that's a guaranteed contract. And when you're in the luxury tax, those things add up. So Jazz are right there at that level. I mean, you're just a pick away from a non-guaranteed contract with the first pick of the second round from the 30th in the first round. So with that, Ben Anderson, KSLSports.com, and overall good dude, kind enough to join us. Ben, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. All right. So I know a lot of it depends on who falls and, you know, the makeup of the draft, but do you get the vibe that the Jazz will pick at 30 tomorrow?
I think they will. I mean, they've always been active. I guess this will be the first time we've seen the Jazz in almost a decade, not really under the full tutelage, I guess, of Dennis Lindsay. And we know that Dennis was very active on draft night, usually, even when the Jazz had the fifth overall pick when they drafted Dante Exum. Apparently, they were trying to get up to number one. So the Jazz have made a lot of moves on draft night, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, et cetera. So I'm curious to see how you know, aggressive they are in trying to move and trying to maneuver more picks. Remember, they made a bunch of trades even last year to move back and then get back in the second round. But I would suspect they probably make the 30th pick, and maybe that's not the only pick they make. It could be an exciting night for Jazz fans.
Well, and that's the interesting thing, too, because we've all gotten to know Justin over the last several years, and, you know, awesome guy, but this is his show now, and I know he's going to lean on a lot of people for their thoughts and their advice, but this is going to be his call. From what you know about Justin, how do you anticipate his level of aggression going into a draft as being the guy?
I think we'll probably see some aggressive moves, and I think it has to do a little bit with roster makeup for the Jazz. And you know, where a little bit of upfront spending might have a back-end payoff, where the Jazz might say, hey, you know, we've been scouting these guys at number 30, and we really like this guy, and we think he's going to be there But if this guy's there at 38 or 41 and we love that guy and would have considered drafting him at 30, maybe you buy back in and maybe you try and get a second pick, which is, I think, what they did last year with Elijah Hughes. So I would imagine you do that. And because the Jazz are going to be hard-pressed financially for the next little while and they probably don't have a first-round pick next year, which is going to go to Memphis to complete the Mike Conley trade, maybe you do spend a little bit of money right now. You buy an extra draft pick or you try and cut a salary by bringing in another first-round pick if someone's interested in one of your veteran players who can help. And you say, yeah, it might be a little bit of a cost either in talent on the floor or a financial price for ownership to have to pay. But if you get a guy who can stick and who you're confident can work out, it could save you a bunch of money in the long run. So that's why the draft is interesting. That's why specifically teams at the end of the first round who have been good during the regular season, when they draft a good player or they find an extra pick or something early in the second round that they can make work, it really can pay huge dividends.
What's your assessment overall of the quality of this year's draft?
It's kind of weird. First of all, I mean, every draft seems to be a reaction of what's happened recently in the NBA. So right now, where the Jazz are drafting at 30, there seems to be a bunch of kind of these two-way guards who maybe have a little bit of Drew Holiday in them. And everyone's, of course, obsessed with Drew Holiday because he was just the difference maker on the Milwaukee Bucks. So you have guys like Jaden Springer and Miles McBride that are kind of these, you know, kind of tough-bodied defensive guards who have some upside offensively, but that's not really their calling card, similar to Drew Holiday. You're seeing a couple of those guys. And then what's interesting for the Jazz is, other than a big guy, and you could even make an argument, depending on what happens with Derek Favors, that they might need a big guy too. The Jazz could use help anywhere from point guard up to power forward, depending on what happens with George Niang this offseason, depending on what happens with Mike Conley, how confident you are in Joe Ingles' future and how long he's going to be in the NBA. There's a lot of options the Jazz could take. I would be surprised if they went with a big guy. But, you know, maybe they've watched Nemias Keita more than anyone else in college basketball or anyone more than anyone in the NBA. And they say, hey, that guy's a late lottery talent and no one's picking him to be that good, even though we think he's really good defensively and he does a lot of the things that Rudy Gobert does. So you go out and you pick him. So, you know, there's certainly options for the Jazz, but I do think it tends to be pretty heavy with guards, specifically kind of defensive-minded guards, which, look, that's not a bad thing for the Jazz, who struggled to keep the Los Angeles Clippers from getting into the paint late in that series.
Was Nemias Keita born about 15 years too late?
Yeah, I mean, certainly if he was a player that, you know, was around in the early 2000s, that was a guy who probably would have been a top 10 pick. He blocks a ton of shots. You know, he's pretty easy to give the ball to. He actually has a little bit of a back-to-the-basket game, probably more than he showed at Utah State. You could see that when he got those opportunities. So, yeah, I mean, he would have been a very highly sought-after center in years past. I still would be stunned if he doesn't have a very good career. He's got a bunch of Nerlens Noel in him. And, you know, Nerlens has been around forever, blew an opportunity to sign a huge contract. That was his own fault. But, you know, he's still a guy who's probably got 4 or 5 years left in the NBA. I won't be at all surprised if, you know, Nemias Keita is the second-round pick or late first-round pick that we see still playing in the 2030 NBA season.
Ben Anderson, KSLSports.com, one of the best of NBA writers and, of course, analysts here in the market, kind enough to join us right here on the Zone Sports Network. Overall, if you're, you know, climbing into the brain of Justin Zanuck, there's going to be some hard decisions to make in terms of, obviously, I think the organization wants to bring Mike Conley back, but then, you know, you've got to shave off a few dollars here and there to try to help out your situation with the luxury tax. And so how do you try to make it all work as you build a roster that, frankly, needs to be able to compete next year at a high level to keep some guys happy?
I mean, I think, honestly, what you have to do up front is you have to pay the price up front. And, again, it's easy for me to spend somebody else's money. I know that I don't have to look at my own bank account when I'm doing that. But you can't play with cards you don't have. You know, if you let Mike Conley go and you don't sign him, you know, and I get it's going to be a big price tag. It's going to be somewhere between, you know, $13 and $20 million to bring him back for who knows how many seasons. But if that's gone, you don't have salary cap space. You can only sign Mike Conley because you have his bird rights, which allow you to go above the salary cap and into the luxury tax to bring him back. So if he walks, you can't go out and chase Kyle Lowry. You can't go out and chase one of these other point guards that's on the market. You're just out that asset. So I think you have to spend to have that asset. And even if you don't find a way to cut the salary this offseason, you can go throughout the year and find a trade that will save you some money. You can find a team that says, hey, we're better than we thought we were. We want to take on one of your, you know, $13 to $19 million contracts, and we'll send you less money back because we can eat that cap space and it cuts your salary cap bill. I think that's the smart way to approach it. I think that's what good teams have historically done. You know, even I know Oklahoma City's not playing super well right now, but they were smart and they went out and were aggressive and traded for Paul George and turned it into all these assets that they have now, when they could have just not made a move like that, not done anything, let those contracts expire that they traded for Paul George, and then they would have had space, but they wouldn't have had any assets. And that's something I think the Jazz should be focused on, is making sure they have assets, making sure they have flexibility through trades, because they're not going to have financial flexibility in the near future, because Donovan Mitchell's, you know, has been paid now, because Rudy Gobert has been paid, and because you're going to have to pay a guy like Mike Conley, or you're keeping Bojan Bogdanovic around. You're just not going to have financial flexibility. So having pieces you could trade to get draft picks back or young assets back, I think that's going to be the smartest move, and it'll probably pay off in the long run.
In terms of mid-level and things like that, how much money do the Jazz have? All things being equal, let's say, you know, Conley comes back at, I guess that's where we should start. Like, obviously the Jazz need to bring him back in some way, shape, or form, but what do you think that contract looks like with Conley in terms of years and money?
I bet it's 2 years. And you know, maybe he signs a one-year deal. Maybe the Jazz are comfortable going a higher number. I would kind of be surprised by that, I guess. Maybe there's going to be a team out there that says, hey, we'll give you 1 year, 25, and the Jazz are saying, well, why don't we give you 2 years and, you know, 35, and that's a little bit more money, and it gets you to being, what, 35, 36 years old by the time his last contract would be starting. And if he wants to retire by then, he's made another $35 million. But maybe he signs a one-year big contract with a team that says, hey, we need a point guard that can come in and help right away. There's not a ton of those rosters out there right now with, A, that type of money, and, B, that type of need that they would give Mike Conley $25 million as opposed to another player that's going to be available out on the market. But, you know, that's probably what I'd be looking at, somewhere at 2 years between $30 and $35 million. I think that's probably a pretty good deal for the Jazz if they can get it. Then you're not stuck with him super long-term. His contract would expire the same time Bojan Bogdanovic's deal would. You would have a little bit of roster and financial flexibility at that point. And it gives you a couple of years to address those salary cap needs. So that's probably what I'd be looking at. But if you sign Mike Conley, you're going to be hard-capped. You're not going to have the biannual exception, which is the smaller, like, $2.5 million contract you can throw out. You will have the taxpayer mid-level exception. I wouldn't be surprised if the Jazz didn't use it, because they're going to be so far in the luxury tax unless they cut a bunch of salary. So if you sign Mike Conley, it's probably going to be draft picks. If you get a second-round pick, you could bring that player in, and maybe a couple of players on the veteran minimum. But if you sign Conley, there's not going to be a big splash, I don't think, following up.
The interesting thing on Mike Conley, and we saw his struggles through the first part of the season, in his first year with the Jazz, and then things settled in, and then he went back in the bubble and was great, and it's been great outside of his health ever since. And I think that people don't realize that, look, if any of us are in a city for 10 years, we get used to it. We get used to how to drive to work. We get used to our coworkers and everybody else, and there's a level of comfort there that allows you to perform pretty well. And you turn that upside down, it takes a while to adjust. And I think that happened to Mike Conley to a certain extent. Knowing that and knowing how difficult maybe that first stretch was in Salt Lake City, adjusting to a new system and a new city and a family moving and all that stuff, does that work in the Jazz favor?
Yeah, I think he probably doesn't want to make a third move. He's got young kids still. He's got three now. He had one while his wife went into labor while he was in the bubble. So,
yeah.
You know, he's got a young family. You know, he's not particularly old. It's funny we talk about him being around forever because he came out of Ohio State after 1 year. He's like a 33-year-old person. Like, it's still a very young human. So he's got a young family. I can't imagine they want to go start over for two more years and then retire to Ohio or wherever he wants to call home when he's done playing basketball. So I do think there's probably some familiarity that will be an advantage for the Jazz, that he's played the best basketball of his career, making an All-Star game, that the Jazz really can pitch to him that they're contenders with him, and they've made a commitment to him, and he plays a very significant role. And it's not out of the realm of possibilities that he could make another All-Star game next year if he re-signs with the Jazz. So I definitely think there's a boost there. It seems like he and Quinn Snyder certainly seem to like each other enough to keep that relationship going. It's not like I ever felt like Mike Conley was at odds with anybody with the Jazz. So I think the Jazz probably should be the odds-on favorite as long as they're willing to spend the money and give him a legitimate offer. And nothing about the way the Jazz are operating right now would make me think that they wouldn't be willing to do that.
And plus, you got that doTERRA money coming in now, so you don't want to mess that up.
Yeah, he's got a couple of local sponsors, so good for him. And you know, some of those companies have some big pockets.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. When you overall, I want to talk a little Olympics with you too. Where's your? I think you know we kind of shrugged off, at least me personally, the Nigeria loss and the Australia loss, because it's like, okay, you know what? These are exhibition games. Don't really matter that much. But then the France, especially the way they lost, giving up the lead in the third quarter, and then France just kind of outclassing them in the fourth quarter. Where's your concern level that this team can right the ship and get back and win a gold medal?
It does seem like they don't necessarily have the toughness when the toughness gets going. Well, you know, when they're in a close game in the third quarter or in the fourth quarter, whether that's in Las Vegas against Nigeria or against Australia or against France in the actual Olympics, it doesn't quite seem like Team USA gels and knows exactly what to do with the ball. Now, when they play Iran last night, who's just, you know, it's just an under-talented team.
Yeah.
They have one guy who's got NBA experience. They have one other player who can really shoot, but that's kind of all they have. Everyone's going to look great. You know, Damian Lillard's going to hit six threes in the first half, and they're going to be brilliant. If they are in a close game in the fourth quarter, the way Australia was with Italy yesterday, and had to find a way to come together and get stops and know where their bread is buttered, and it's not just isolation, they know Patty Mills or Joe Ingles can get Jock Landale or Kay involved. Like, they know how to do those things. And Team USA, I don't trust, knows how to do those. Now, they can ISO, and they can still probably get good buckets, but then you're getting more down to a make-or-miss game where Australia, Spain, certainly France, kind of has this idea of, hey, this is our identity. We've hit these shots before. We've had this experience at this level. And Team USA is probably going to be guessing a little bit on still what is the best line to be called. Like, so I don't have a ton of confidence. I'll tell you, I got more confident last night watching Australia struggle with Italy, even though they still pulled it out, just to realize that there's no infallible team. There's no other super team. And still, the talent is so overwhelmingly in the hands and in favor of the Americans, who just, yeah, I don't know who you go to. Even, you know, Jeremy Grant would be maybe the best player on Australia. He might be the best player, or I guess probably the second or third best player on the French team. The Americans have a legitimate argument that they have the three or four best players on the floor every single time, every lineup, regardless of who they play and who they're playing against.
You know, I don't know if it's just Joe Ingles. I don't think it is. I think it's bigger than just Joe, but that Australian team is really likable. Like, I have a hard time not. I mean, look, I'm all about USA. You know, red, white, and blue. Let's go. Let's win a gold medal. But I'm enjoying watching Australia and the makeup of that team. I had no idea Matisse Thybulle had any roots to Australia until I saw these things get going in Vegas. So that's a fun team to watch. I like the makeup of that squad.
Yeah, it probably helped that Ben Simmons wasn't on the roster. Honestly, they're fun to watch. They all shoot the ball. Even Dante Exum is willing to take shots. But you're right. It's a bunch of easy guys to root for. Joe Ingles plays in a very fun way. He's fun to watch. Patty Mills is extremely fun. Matisse Thybulle's ability to do it on both ends of the floor. Even Dante Exum, who still plays somewhat chaotically, it's fun to see him out there and playing at this level and making a difference. So it's a team that really likes each other and is really playing hard, and they seem to be playing for something, which I think is the fun part of Olympic basketball. And I don't want to say Team USA isn't, but it would mean so much to even win a bronze, because Australia has never medaled before. You see how important it is to each guy every second they're on the floor.
Back to the draft a little bit. Do you anticipate, not just from the Jazz, but overall, do you anticipate any fireworks tomorrow?
I would be surprised, I guess, if there was a major, major shakeup. Generally, if there is, we've kind of heard those, you know, wheels spinning already at this point. It would be crazy if maybe tomorrow night there was a super blockbuster trade. The name I would keep an eye on would be Damian Lillard, and I don't think Portland would be smart to do that unless they had an absolute knockout pick coming back, plus good players, and we just haven't seen anybody really lining up to do that. So I would be surprised if we saw huge names traded. I don't think we'll get to that point. I'm sure there'll be a lot of jockeying, though, you know, late lottery, early 20s. I think there'll be teams trying to move around. It seems like there's a group of players between maybe 8 and 13 or 14 that teams really like, especially teams that feel like they're close to contending, could go up and get a veteran player, an experienced player in the draft who could come in and help right away. So I think there will be movement. I don't think there's going to be anything super, super exciting as far as superstar names go.
For those that don't watch a lot of college hoops, tell us a little bit about Cade Cunningham's game and how quickly he'll impact the league next year.
Yeah, he's going to come in as the odds-on favorite to win Rookie of the Year. He's going to get so much opportunity in Detroit. He can do everything. Now, the one thing he doesn't do that will maybe make him a little bit different or may not make him this highlight reel player that, you know, some of the other players that that have been, you know, recent rookie of the years like LaMelo or even Anthony Edwards, who was really fun to watch last year, he's just not super explosive. Like, he's not going to have 10 highlight reel dunks next year that turn your head, that make you think, oh, man, this guy's Vince Carter, Kobe, you know, Tracy McGrady. He's not that type of player. But he can do everything. He's a really good defensive player. He's an incredibly good passer. He's the type of guy who will go into the third quarter with 8 assists and 12 points and finish with 28 points and 12 assists. Like, he just knows, I'm going to watch the game, I'm going to take in the game for three quarters, and in the fourth quarter, it's Cade Cunningham time, and I'm going to take over offensively everywhere, and I'm going to be the best player on the floor. And he might be the best player for Detroit next year for a lot of games, the same way I think LaMelo was last season for Charlotte. He just has the ability to dictate what's going on in a way that not a lot of players that age know how to do. So he's really good. He has a chance to be very special at the NBA level, and I think he's – and even better, he's a safe pick. You know, he's not this crazy, you know, flyer that you're hoping for him to reach all of his upside. He has so much of it already. So he's going to be really fun to watch. I think NBA fans are going to like him. But, yeah, most people didn't watch Oklahoma State. They were just the first team that offered him as a freshman, and he stuck with it. So he's even got kind of that work ethic that I think people should like.
And then finally, does Chris Paul run it back with Phoenix? Or, you know, everybody talks about the Lakers. I just don't know how that works with him, you know, potentially going to L.A. But what do you think the how do you think the future looks for him?
I don't think you can turn down $44 million. Yeah, I just don't. Yeah. Nobody else has that money. And that's 1 year. You know, if you want to sign with the Lakers, sign with them next year. LeBron is still going to be good a year from now. And so will Anthony Davis. So make your $44 million. If it doesn't work out with Phoenix, you're $44 million richer. And then go sign with whoever is good, because they're going to want you. And you can take $5 million or $10 million or $2 million if you want. But you have to sign a $44 million deal. You have to come back with a team that was 2 wins away from winning a championship. I don't think Phoenix comes back as the favorite to come out of the West next year. I think they had extreme health in a very weird season. But they're still going to be good. And it's a good spot for Chris Paul, and he seems to like his teammates, which honestly doesn't happen everywhere he goes. So I would be stunned if he passes on that money.
Yeah. State Farm's not paying him enough money. You do bring up a really good point, because there's a lot of guys that have really struggled with Chris Paul. And that doesn't seem to be the case, at least. You know, you haven't heard those throughout the throughout his year in Phoenix, and it makes me wonder a little bit if maybe he's getting a little older and maybe not as rough around the edges, kind of how Kobe softened up a little bit later on in his career. Not, I mean, by Kobe standards, was still rough, but not quite the running Dwight Howard out of Los Angeles rough. So I wonder if maybe there's a point in his career where maybe he realizes, I don't have to be the alpha, you know, that people hate playing with.
Maybe. But also, maybe there was just nobody in that locker room who had done it before. You know, Devin Booker was the closest, and he still never made the playoffs. So who's going to tell Chris Paul in that locker room that they're wrong? Like, I understand why James Harden would. I understand why Blake Griffin might. I understand why these guys along the way have had issues with Chris Paul, because they had previous experience or they were top overall picks. And nobody in Phoenix had that. I know Devin Booker's been good, but he's, you know, he'd only made, what, one All-Star game before last year. He was kind of a late selection. He got added in as an injury replacement. Like, nobody had a reason to have an ego to fight Chris Paul. And maybe that does change next season. And maybe they say, hey, I was good in the finals, or I remember the mistakes you made in the finals. Not everything you say is right. So I'm not sure I would have a ton of faith that next year goes as smoothly for Phoenix as it did this year.
Mm. Well, hey, I've kept you way too long. It's always fun catching up with you. Love picking your brain. Thanks for your time. And, again, get to KSLSports.com and enjoy some of the insight from Ben. Kills it as always. Thanks for your time, man.
See you soon, Scotty. Thanks.
Ben Anderson right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network, live here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4500 South State Street. Tons of Jazz gear still available for you. A lot of great savings on these vehicles. Come down, check out the vehicles with a forever warranty, and that's all of them. All new vehicles and about 95% of their used inventory as well. You drive that vehicle as long as you want. Put as many miles as you can on it. It doesn't matter. If the engine goes out, it's covered. Transmission goes out, it's covered. And what's that worth to you? Well, it's worth a lot. That peace of mind is worth a ton, but it costs you absolutely nothing. It's included for free. It's all right here on 97.5, 1280, The Zone, and The Zone Sports Network. If you missed Britton Covey, you'll hear from him next right here on The Zone Sports Network.
The Big Show. The Big Show. With Jake Scott and Gordon Monson.
Greg Rubel, voice of the BYU Cougars. Let's say the Big 12 just says every university for itself. Maybe people would think that's a negative scenario for BYU, but might it be a positive because they do bring more value than a lot of those schools that all of a sudden would be scrambling?
If you were to talk about making an athletics-based and market-based decision for your league and its long-term future, BYU could be a valuable asset. Once you start getting into everything else involving philosophies and fit and all the things that have tended to ruffle some feathers in the highest offices in the past, well, then things get somewhat complicated. But the things that really drive these decisions, BYU checks a lot of boxes for whichever league we're interested.
Catch the Big Show weekdays from 2 to 7. Presented by Big O Tires, the team you trust. On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Spin the wheel and talk some sports. This is another edition of Sports Roulette with Hans Olsen and Scotty G. On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Ninety-seven-five, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Time for another edition of Sports Roulette. Take some of the big storylines we've not had a chance to get to. Put it on a nice little roulette wheel, spin it, and wherever that ball lands is what we end up talking about. All brought to you by Davis Vision. Remember, the summer LASIK sale continues on. You get $1,000 off of LASIK. All you have to do is call right now, 801-253-3080. That's 801-253-3080. Or you can check them out online at Davis Vision MD. Make sure you ask for our good friend Robin. She's a big fan of the station. I've known her for over a decade. One of my favorite people on the planet. Ask for her. She'll set you up for that consultation, and you're good to go. Again, that number, 801-253-3080. All right, Lloyd, fire up that wheel.
Britton Covey.
Yes, Britton Covey had a chance to sit down and chat with Jake Scott and PK yesterday at Pac-12 Media Day and started out by discussing golf handicaps.
Yeah, well, that's my current – sometimes I wonder what's the point, though. Why did I even get down to a four handicap? Like, what am I going to do with that skill? So,
well, beat up on your coach. He thinks he's a player, but he's not.
Right. We actually have – I organized a players versus coaches scramble this week.
That's
on Thursday.
That's what I heard. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, well, where is
players
it be?
Versus coaches?
I know.
Okay. Where is it going to be?
It's going to be Eaglewood Golf Course up
sure.
in North Salt Lake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We got Drew Lisk coming back. So hopefully that gives us a little bit of firepower.
Who's a player on your team?
I'd say the best player is probably Charlie Vincent, running back for East, who's now running back for the U, and then Charlie Brewer, actually, is probably
Brewer's
the next
player?
Best. Yeah, Brewer's a pretty good player. Okay. So I would say those guys. Most of the other guys can't hit the ball much, but.
But those guys can play?
Those guys can play, yeah, yeah.
All well, right.
Get Whittingham in the trap, and you'll be fine.
He'll struggle. So, hey, excited to have you here with us. It's got to be nice to get back to a season, you know, starting with Media Day that's a little bit on the normal side, right?
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I was supposed to do this last year, and it was all virtual. I didn't even feel like I did it. So I was really excited to come here. And I don't know, I feel like I've done a lot of interviews in my career, and so it kind of just feels more normal. I used to get super nervous before things, and now I just realize that people just want you to be yourself and stuff. And so it's also fun to be with the other guys. You know, there's 22 yeah. other players here. It's fun to be here in a non-competitive atmosphere with them.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of guys say that. And I don't know if it's because they know we're a Salt Lake station, but there's been about four or five of them that brought up your name.
Oh, really?
And their interactions with you, yeah.
Oh, well, that's nice of them. I don't know. I think they just get a kick out of me, probably because I am goofy.
And you're small.
Yeah, small.
You're
and
different.
Goofy. Yeah, maybe a little bit. So losing my hair, you know, already.
And you're old.
Right.
But all preseason, all conference, twice. Might I add, is it pretty cool to, I guess, the recognition might be old hat to you at this point, but pretty cool to have some high expectations set by the folks who consume this conference?
I think so. Honestly, sometimes I prefer it not that way because that's how I was my whole life. But at the same time, it's kind of a testament to what I've done. because my whole life I was never on those lists. I wasn't highly recruited. I was a two-star coming out of high school. No one expected me to play my freshman year, and then coming back from my mission, everyone expected me to play poorly. Coming back from my ACL, everyone. So having some expectations to me is a sign of respect, and you know that I've kind of overcome certain things that people didn't think I would. So I think that's just become a pattern in my career, I guess.
Well, you're a highly skilled player. I mean, I still reference back to sitting up in the press box in the Coliseum and that punt return against SC. And, you know, I can go on and on. Really, the only thing that has derailed you has been injuries.
Right.
And I don't know if it's just circumstance, it's your size or what. But if you can find your way to stay on the field, you will be productive. I don't think there's any question about that. Can you stay on the field, man? What do you need to do to make sure that you're out there those 12 games?
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting is everybody likes to bring up the games where I've been hit way hard and things like that.
Washington
and Washington State last year. Yeah. I've never missed a game or a play or anything from hits. Right. I've never missed. It's all been my ACL and then a couple soft tissue injuries. So, you know, the concept of getting injured because you're taking hits to me isn't correct as much. You don't worry about that as much. You do worry about it for sure. You got to be smart. You know, my old high school coach texts me after every game to run out of bounds and things like that. So you got to be smart. But it's the soft tissue, small muscle groups. Those are the things that you got to work on, because I've missed a game or two games because of a hamstring. I've missed my ACL, and then I missed a game because of a groin. And so that's what I've been focusing on this season, the last 6 months. So I hired a personal trainer, Dr. Skyler Main, and he specializes in that. We just do a lot of hips and hamstrings, groins, because that's been the only thing that's taken me out, really.
Chase Hansen had a term he used one time when I was interviewing him. And rather than rehab, he called it prehab.
Yes, yeah, that definitely. And that's the biggest difference between my body now and in high school or freshman year. I need prehab. You know, back in the day, I could just go out, no warm-up, nothing, and I was totally fine. But now you got to go in an hour before every practice at least, and you got to get foam rolling, stretching, getting these muscle groups firing. So, yeah,
before
I agree with Chase.
Every practice, you're saying, too? Not
before
just games?
Practice, oh, yeah, okay. Before every practice, yeah, before every practice. That's how you stay healthy. So I've been healthy for about 7-8 months now.
You keep it going.
So this is a hard question to ask because of it's just such a sad story. But Ty Jordan was such a big part of the offense last year, and he was a star. I mean, he was just incredible, and that's why there's a big on-field component, because he was so good. But, you know, I guess talk about the challenge of going into the season offensively without a player like that.
Yeah. Well, it definitely changes the dynamic, because you can use a player like Ty in so many different roles, especially with how many different skill sets he had. The good thing is we have more depth this year on the offensive side of the ball than any year that I've come through. I've learned not to, you know, speak too highly of things before things come to pass, you know, from my past interviews and things. But the depth on the offensive side of the ball is what's really impressive this year. So we're going to have 3 tight ends that can play. You're going to have 8 receivers that can play, and there's no drop-off between the 1 and the 2. You're going to have 3 running backs, maybe 4 running backs that are all consistent. So what you lose in a playmaker like Ty, I think you make up for in depth and in rotations and having to have guys fresh rather than just focusing on how can we get this one player the ball. So it is tough to lose that part of your
offense.
Such
a tough story.
A lot of focus on the quarterback, as you know. I got to admit that I'm a little bit skeptical, and you can answer this question that I'm going to get to as I set it up. You know, I know Brewer's coming in, and he threw for a ton of yards, but I sort of view the Big 12 as like the Colorado Rockies in baseball. Their stats at home are always way better than their stats on the road because of the altitude and whatever. And I view Big 12 quarterbacks, I have a little bit of skepticism because it's like they don't play any defense in that conference the way other conferences do. So I don't know what to make of all these yards that he threw for, because I don't know that I believe in the defenses the way he's going to face better defenses, I believe, in the Pac-12. But you've been with this kid. Now, we haven't been – normally we could go to spring ball, but we haven't been able to do that. And – so we didn't see him last year because he wasn't on the team. You're there. What do you – I don't even know if he'll win the job, but if he does, what do you see from this kid?
Well, the first thing that I noticed from Charlie was – and this was always hard for me to do as a quarterback in high school, but I always should have done better at it – was you trust your matchups, even if that means just throwing it up to a guy. So, for example, I had Samson Nakua in high school as a receiver. I literally could have just thrown it up every play, but I would wait until he was open, mm-hmm. And for that reason, I had a great completion percentage, but I also missed a lot of opportunities, I feel like. Charlie's really good at understanding matchups to where it's just, it's going to be this coverage, but at the end of the day, I trust my guy more than I trust this DB. Uh-huh. And you see that in his quick decision-making. It's like he doesn't overcomplicate things. He sees a matchup with Vele on the outside with someone, and he's like, oh, I'm taking that. And I think that comes from experience. You go look at his film at Baylor, lots of fades, lots of inside fades, lots of red zone fades, post routes, kind of jump ball type things where he just trusts, he gets to know his players and he trusts them. And I don't think that's going to change. Now, the other thing is he's really good at simplifying. I said this before, simplifying defenses. There's, people try and disguise things. But in college, you still can get away with most of your reads being pre-snap. And I know Tyler Huntley was that way. I mean, the vast majority of his reads were pre-snap. And as long as you can put the ball on the money, you'll be fine. And it's interesting because Charlie doesn't have the strongest arm I've ever seen. He's not the tallest I've ever seen. He's not the most athletic I've ever seen. But he plays a lot like Tyler in that he simplifies the offense. I'm with you, though. I like slowing down the hype train on things till we see. I think that's important. I think that's good for Charlie, especially because Cam Rising is a great player.
Right.
He knows the offense like the back of his hand right now. Mm-hmm. And there really will be a competition there. So I like slowing it down, not trying to hype things up too much. But I also can speak for Charlie in the sense that there's a reason he has 9,000 career passing yards. And there's a reason he is so highly touted.
Well, Britton, thank you for jumping on with us. We appreciate
it.
It's
already?
Great to see you. Yeah, I mean, there you got
just
people.
Just got started. He's Britton freaking Covey.
Yeah. Talk to him all day. Go ahead. What one thing do you want to ask Britton Covey?
Okay, another thing that I don't like to hype up is performances in the spring game.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I've seen guys that just go crazy and they don't do as much. But this Vele kid caught my eye.
Yeah.
How real is he?
Well, here's the thing. Vele has performed in every practice for the last year and a half. I've talked with Vele about this personally, so I don't, when he gets into a game, he gets a little bit nervous, and I'm helping him with that right now because when I say, like, I've never seen potential in someone like I have in Vele, he's got the same body type as, like, a Tim Patrick.
Uh-huh.
When we go play pickup ball, he's doing through-the-leg 360 dunks.
Oh,
like,
really?
He's the most athletic player you'll meet. And when he gets out on the field in practice, he just dominates. I mean, he would route up Jalen Johnson and Julian Blackman.
I've heard of those guys.
But he needs that to carry over to the game where he has that confidence. So
I think
it's more of a mental thing right now where he's working through that. And I'm fine with the height team being slow, but he's one I can say with confidence that at some point he's going to break out. Because of how good he is, especially if we use him right. I mean, you throw a jump ball to Vele in the red zone, it's a 80% chance he catches it, 20% chance it's incomplete. They're not intercepting that ball. Like, it's the most safe play you can do. So I hope we do things like that
cool.
with him.
Great stuff, Britton Covey. Although I don't know if he enjoyed PK listing off all the things. Well, you're old. Oh, you're going bald. Oh, you've been around here forever.
Yeah, what
oh,
was
you're
that?
Short. That was a little awkward.
That was uncalled for.
I know. Well, it was a little bit like, we joke about it, but it was literally one of the most uncomfortable moments I've been a part of doing radio is when we're sitting down at Pac-12 Media Day and Christian McCaffrey, who's now, gone to Pro Bowls in the NFL, he's playing for Stanford, and PK is calling him out for being small. And the look that Christian McCaffrey gave to PK was, I will snap you in half right now if you say one more thing. He was really, really uncomfortable.
I think he did all right for himself.
Yeah, Christian's done okay. He's doing all right. He's making some money. He's just fine, regardless of how big or small he is. All right, 1245, Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Aaron Rodgers addressing the media in Green Bay at training camp. He had some stuff to say, and you're going to hear some of it coming up next right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com, host of the podcast of Champions. So, Oklahoma and Texas, what have you heard in Los Angeles? How does this reverberate?
You were looking forward to new leadership in the Pac-12, George Klyavkov coming in, Larry Scott going out, and want to make as big of a splash as you can. And this is news that can dwarf anything that the Pac-12 is going to do. It's good in one aspect that one of your rivals, the Big 12, will be gutted, and you're going to move up the hierarchy no matter what. But I think it just puts the Pac-12 on notice. What are you going to do to try to compete in this new landscape? It's definitely changed the game, and it's not going to make it easy for George Klyavkov to try to put his stamp on West Coast football. The good thing, though, is that the Big 12 won't be a threat anymore. Maybe there's some pieces there that the Pac-12 can pick up.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and the Zone Sports Network. Draft day coming up tomorrow for the NBA. Nemeish Keita from Utah State expected to go maybe a best case scenario late first into the second round. It was interesting. I was just looking at Jonathan Giovanni from ESPN. Has him going number 60 overall. So that'd be kind of funny if Utah State had back-to-back players taken 60th overall. But it's an interesting player. And, of course, I've pretty much called. I think there's only been two or three basketball games that I've missed due to conflicts with football. But for the most part, I've called every game that Nemeish Keita has played in a Utah State uniform. And he's an imposing force defensively. Incredible shot blocker, incredible defender, on ball, off the ball, help defense. He does so many things really well, and his offensive game is not as bad as a lot of people assume that a big will that a big has. So
I would say coming around,
like that's the thing. Like
shaping up,
he can hit that mid range jumper. Like he can hit that elbow jumper that you might need to hit as a big in the league, he can knock it down. Now, look, he's not going to stretch you out. He's not going to be hitting threes, although he claims he can. And we always had a joke about the fact that he wanted to shoot more threes. But as far as a back-to-the-basket game and a mid-range jump shooter, I think Nemeish Keita can help you out. Look, if he was born 15 years earlier, he'd be a lottery pick. That's just, unfortunately for him, the NBA has evolved into a game where his certain set of skills doesn't necessarily translate to be worthy of a high-level draft pick. But he can certainly help a team out, and it'll be fun to see how this thing plays out for him. All right, Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Aaron Rodgers, for the first time since all of this nonsense broke out about, what was it, draft day? That it sounded like you had Mark Schlereth going out there saying that the deal was almost done to send him to the Denver Broncos. And since then, Green Bay's really dug in their heels. Well, Aaron Rodgers has addressed the media for the first time. Training camp underway in Green Bay. And why was there an issue with ownership? And why was there an issue with management? Well, Aaron Rodgers breaks it down.
So I wanted to offer my services as a recruiter, you know. And I think we can all understand, you know, Green Bay isn't, a huge vacation destination. People are coming here to play with me, to play with our team, and knowing that they can win a championship here. And the fact that I haven't been used in those discussions was one I wanted to change moving forward. And I felt like based on my years, the way I can still play, that should be a natural part of the conversation. As that progressed from that point, nothing really changed on that front. So we got into March, and the conversation changed. As I felt like if you can't commit to me past 2021, and I'm not a part of recruiting process and free agency, if I'm not a part of the future, then instead of letting me be a lame duck quarterback, if you want to make a change and move forward, then go ahead and do it. That obviously didn't happen. Like I said, it wasn't a draft day thing. There were.
So Aaron Rodgers kind of lays it out there. And from his perspective, you kind of get where he's going, saying that, look, I want to go out there. I want to help recruit. I want to help bring guys here to Green Bay to help this offense so we can go win a championship. Back-to-back years in the NFC Championship game. So, obviously, they're right there on the cusp of getting to a Super Bowl for a chance to win another title. He said, look, free agency's beginning. Let me go out. Let me help. Let me be part of the pitches to help bring some guys in here to help us out. Green Bay, according to Aaron Rodgers, declined. Aaron's like, all right, well, then via a contract extension, let's find out what my future is here and what I can do for this organization long term and commit to me past 2021. Packers apparently didn't do that either. So according to Aaron Rodgers, like, look, you're not letting me go out and recruit. You're not using me as a recruiter. And you're telling me essentially that you don't know if I'm in the plans for the team long term. So if that's the case, then let me go somewhere else. Let me go play somewhere else where a team that wants to commit to me for several years that will allow me to be part of their organization in terms of bringing free agents. Look, Tom Brady got signed by the Buccaneers and he went to work. I mean, he probably that ink on that pen wasn't even dry yet before Gronk had committed to come back out of retirement and play for Tampa Bay. So, I mean, the way you look at it, it just sounds like Tom Brady wanted to be in Green Bay, wanted to be there long term, but the Packers unwilling to commit to him long term. Now, remember, this is before the MVP season. You know, this is before he played as well as he did last year. So I can understand why he's a little frustrated. I can understand why he wants to move on. And apparently, you know, the way this looks is that Green Bay essentially is saying, look, we're going to give you one more year, and I don't know what they're going to do with him from a contract standpoint, if they'll just let him play under his current contract or they'll incentivize something for 1 year. But he'll get his money for 1 year and then probably either be released or the trade will happen after this upcoming season. But in 2022, he's playing for a different team. And it may be Lloyd's Raiders, it might be my Broncos, or Lloyd, it might be our Raiders, I guess. I don't know how where we're at right
now. Yes, it could be. Like, the thing is, like, he seems like he has still a lot in the tank.
Yeah.
Like, I'm surprised Green Bay, and I'd love to hear kind of their side of this now that he's finally come out and said his piece and let his side be known. Because to not let him be in the plans, and I actually kind of just, I mean, I get it, it's not a vacation destination, Green Bay, but Green Bay has so much history. Players want to play in Green Bay. Like, yeah. It's got a lot of rich history, NFL history. I mean, the Lombardi Trophy, for hell's sakes. Like, there's so much history with the Packers. So, but you got to let the guy, if the guy recruit a little bit or be a part of it, I would think. I would think you'd want to anyways.
Seems like it would make sense, but apparently that's not to be. And Aaron Rodgers will play one more year in Green Bay, and then unless things change in a big way, it'll be Jordan Love's team, which is, by the way, if you're Jordan Love, you got to be breathing a deep sigh of relief right now, because you get one more year to kind of figure things out, one more year to try to evolve as a quarterback and develop as a quarterback at the NFL level before you have to take over for that team. Next year, I think it'll be a little bit easier for him, because now Green Bay Packer fans, they see the end in sight. They see, okay, we got one more season. We can enjoy it, try to make a run, and then move on from there. Had he been traded and it ended as abruptly as we all thought for a moment that it might, that puts Jordan Love in a really bad spot. But let's, you know, hey, Lloyd, let's just say this. What happens if this turns into a last stand Chicago Bulls thing? Let's say Aaron Rodgers leads the Packers. They go out and win a Super Bowl. And then all of a sudden he can move on and play for a different team. And then you got Jordan Love as a starter for a team that's just coming off a Super Bowl win. That's probably not a great situation.
No, that'll be a little tough. That'd be tough for fans, too. Fans would be like, man, we just won a Super Bowl. Why are you letting him go?
Yeah, exactly. Let's roll it back. Let's go again.
It's not good.
Yeah. All right, live here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4500 South State Street. Love these guys, Stan, Rich, the rest of the dudes down here, ready to help you out with whatever situation you're in. Let's talk about your used car that you've been driving maybe for a couple of years, and you think, I'm way upside down on it. That may not be the case right now because they need used cars so badly that they'd be willing to give you more for that used vehicle than ever before. In fact, that thing has probably generated $2,000 or $3,000. It's gone up in value. So you think you're upside down maybe 6 or 7. You might be only upside down 3. 2 or 3, or maybe you're back to break even if you've only owned it for a year or so. You don't like it. It's not a right fit for you. You're not happy with your payments or whatever the case is. Come by, flip that into one of these new vehicles down here, a car that you want to drive. You get 0% financing on 9 of these models. So, and then you have a forever warranty, which means you can drive it for as long as you want, and it'll always be covered, and that thing costs you nothing. I'm telling you, it is a win-win situation. These guys have done such a tremendous job to put you in a better car buying situation. There's a lot of weird things going on in the car buying business right now, but it's all working to your advantage. So come down here and let's go. And plus, I got a bunch of jazz gear, too. If you just want a jazz shirt, say hi. Tell me how much you miss Hands. All right, we can do that. Just come by. Let's go. Hands and Scotty, 1 o'clock straight up. Final hour of the show. Spencer Nelson will join us coming up at 1 o'clock. At 1:30, we'll announce another selection, our top 60 and 60. And then we're going to sneak in George Kilofkoff, the new commissioner of the Pac-12. We'll get some comments from him in there as well. It's all right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.